Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 46, and today we'll be talking about determining who the right clients are for you. But as usual, before we start, let's share what's new with us. Well, let's see. We are now almost at the end of June, and so my daughter just got out of school. They finished later here in California than the rest of the country. So she finished on June 11th, and she's doing sort of like a summer. She's got summer camps, but she has a little summer school, which I think I've mentioned in previous episodes, just for a month. So that helps me to work all morning without interruption. And then we all have lunch together, which is nice, different from the regular school year. And then my daughter luckily still naps, so I can take the afternoon a few hours as well. So that's been really nice.
Lovely.
Yeah. And then, not that that's anything like news to share, but I'm also going to be teaching a LinkedIn masterclass for training for translators for anybody who's interested. I know that this episode is airing on June 29th, so there's not much time left to sign up. But if you happen to hear this, it's a 3-hour masterclass and it will be on Thursday, July 1st. So if you're interested in that, go to trainingfortranslators.com and you'll find that LinkedIn masterclass as well. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And also I am working on some new copywriting assignments and translations for some clients of mine. It's been very busy lately with copywriting, which is nice. And I'm doing a series right now for one of my clients on, I don't know if this is of interest to any life sciences translators or copywriters, on taking biologics. So if that's something that interests you, it would be really cool to get some feedback from other translators on work they've done related to biologics for different chronic conditions. So that's really been fun and interesting. And I'm working on preparing a new course that I'll be giving for training for translators in September, which is about, it's also a masterclass. It's about writing better copy for your website. Mm. So that is going to be another 3-hour, just a 1-day type thing. And I'm excited to share that because I know a lot of translators and interpreters want to work on the copy for their website, but they put it off a lot. And understandably so. It is a bit of a daunting task, but hopefully this will help break it down and people will walk away with some strategies to get to writing and get their website copy updated. So, yeah, what about you?
Well, I don't have many work-related updates to share because I'm taking almost a month off this summer, which is amazing. So I have just returned from my trip to Moscow. It was wonderful to see my family and friends and show my daughter the city that I love and where I grew up. We did take her there when she was 2 years old, but of course, now that she's 8, she doesn't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was wonderful. And I hope to be able to come back soon. And in the meantime, I'm getting ready for our next trip to the Oregon coast.
Mm.
It has been just so freeing and amazing to have some time off and switch gears because of the crazy year 2020. I really haven't taken any serious vacation or time off last year. So taking almost a whole month this summer just feels very much needed and like a luxury at the same time.
I know. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I remember like last year, 2020, everybody in the US was like so upset that they would see all of our, you know, like friends and colleagues and families in Europe. having vacation because, you know, at that time they had been locked down and they did like a real lockdown, not like here, you know, for that whole spring. And then people actually did get to take some vacation. I mean, it wasn't like probably a regular year, but we were all like, oh, you know, the people who were, you know, taking this very seriously, we didn't get to travel at all. And now this year, a lot of us are traveling because it, I guess, you know, the way that the vaccine has been rolled out in the U.S. being faster than in a lot of other places. And I'm seeing that a lot of, at least my family in Spain and such, you know, they're getting their second dose of the vaccine. Some of them, like the older ones, my aunts and uncles, but it's still being rolled out. And a lot of the younger ones, have, they don't have, you know, know when they're going to get it. And it's just interesting how this has all played out, but I'm hopeful. I know there are a lot of people getting ready to travel and enjoy the summer. And that's really nice. A nice change.
Yeah, it's lovely to be able to do that and to switch gears. And I'm not taking my laptop on these trips, which was a little scary at first because I got so used to working on stuff and just like being connected. But I'm telling myself that I did everything I was supposed to do. I informed my clients. I referred work to colleagues. I sent my out-of-office message with a few like contacts of colleagues that I recommend. And now I deserve to not think about work and enjoy time with family.
Yes. Especially after the last year and a half.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed. Good for you.
Thank you. And I know work will be there when I come back in 2 weeks. It's not that, you know, I'm fully expecting to get work the minute I'm back. But I know it's there for me to find when I'm in that, you know, in that zone again. And I'm prepared to do extra marketing and outreach when I come back. But I think it will be very healthy for me both to take time off from my business and anything work related. And it will be healthy for my business to, you know, freshen things up and change things up when I'm back.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's get into the meat of today's episode. Having a freelance business, right, means that you're always looking for new clients, sort of like what you were just talking about when you get back. I was just thinking about that as I was saying this, but it's true. You know, even if you have regular clients, all freelance translators and interpreters should be planning ahead. And I was thinking about it as you were saying that, that you are already planning ahead and you're only taking, what, 2 weeks off for that particular trip. And yeah, and planning ahead, marketing their services, or responding to inquiries from new potential clients. But just like, you know, you're not always the right fit for a particular project or client, they might also not be the right fit for you. So this goes back to the goals and aspirations that you have for your business, for your specializations, or your particular schedule or personal circumstances. But how do you determine if a particular client is right for you? This can be especially hard if you're just starting out and you have little to no experience. It can also be difficult if you've never thought about these things before and if you're used to saying yes to every project that comes your way. So today we're going to share our thoughts and tips on this topic. So I thought I'd share a little bit about why it's healthy for your business and your work-life clarity to determine who the right clients are for you. And so in my mind, this is something that I think especially new translators and interpreters probably don't do early on. And I can see why. I mean, I understand taking as much work as you can to get experience in a lot of different areas, but I think it becomes a slippery slope very quickly after you do have some experience to not take a step back and say, but wait, who are the right clients for me? And for everybody, that's different. And what I like to tell people when I talk to colleagues about this is the right clients for you are going to change with your business and with your circumstances, right? And I think we've discussed this maybe before. You know, early on for me, I worked with some clients that were very demanding, but I had a high volume of work. And it was, I made great money, you know, but at the same time, I had very little work-life clarity. And so I had, you know, thinking back now, I'm thinking I should have weighed my options earlier and determined who the right clients were. Just because the volume was high doesn't mean that it was, that client was the right fit for me, right? Because there was, in some cases, little respective boundaries. In other cases, even if I had set boundaries, maybe I didn't stick to them myself, right? Because I was like, oh yeah, I'll take that. I can do this extra thing, or I can work late tonight. And then that turns into more than one night, turns into weeks maybe. So I think that you really have to not just determine like who your favorite clients are, because of course that needs to be a factor, like do you like the clients you work yeah. with, but also what's the healthiest thing for your business and for you, you know? What do you yeah. think about that?
Yeah, it's, I can relate to the feeling of like not really knowing it's a thing when you get it started, because that's how it was for yeah. me when I first started as a freelancer.
Which I think that's normal, you know?
Yeah.
It's part of the process.
Right. You just want to make money. And then you're so excited when you mm-hmm. get clients that you don't question some of the factors that you take into account when you're yeah. When you've been doing this for some years. Mm-hmm. And financials are a factor, of course, for everyone. But it also, I feel like when I get paid, I want to be left with a feeling that I didn't waste my time and mm-hmm. or I didn't spend my time wisely.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a waste of time, but could I have done something better and more rewarding? Mm-hmm. Pay is important, of course, but it's also important for me that the clients I work with are a source of joy and just that feeling of my work is rewarding, you know, and our relationship is rewarding, rather than a source of stress and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Because maybe they have different expectations or work rhythm than I have. Mm-hmm. And then another thing that counts for me is that little extra, like the personal approach. It's not that I expect to be best friends with my clients, but feeling that they're receptive to suggestions, feeling that they are willing to offer me feedback, mm-hmm. And not like I'm sending stuff out into this black hole and never hear back. Mm. And feeling like I am treated as a valuable contributor, someone who adds value.
Yeah.
And not like, you know, not having these transactional
relationships. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like those types of business relationships come with time, because I mm-hmm. think early on when you are accepting a lot of different things, trying to get experience, you do feel that. You may not think about it at the time like that, you know, but yeah. you do feel that sense of this is a transactional thing, right? One in, one out. Yeah. They send it to me. I do it. I respond. I send it back. I deliver, you know.
Right.
But yeah, finding clients, you know, where you feel a part of the team, I feel like those types of clients also pay better usually.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's typically, true. You know.
Mm. So it's really important. But how do you decide on the right kind of clients for you and your business? One way to approach this is to think through what your strengths are and where you still have room to grow, or about the things that you enjoy and things that don't work for you at all. For example, mm-hmm. do you enjoy complete autonomy in your work and being responsible for the project from A to Z? Or do you like working as part of a team and having those conversations and working together with other people on the client's team or other colleagues? Or do you prefer focusing on a specific task and letting other people take care of the rest? Another thing to consider could be, do you enjoy working with direct clients and having all those conversations that we typically don't have when we work with agencies, you know, helping them determine their needs, find solutions that work for them, navigate their specific circumstances and deadlines.
Negotiating.
Right, negotiating, yeah. Not everyone enjoys that. So if you don't enjoy that, that's a learning experience mm-hmm. too, you know, and that's a criteria to take into account. Do you like working with individual clients? You know, I do some official document translations, and not everyone enjoys that, because you have to be available to answer questions that, you know, sometimes people call me on the phone like, I'm sorry, this is probably a silly mm-hmm. question. And they want to know everything mm-hmm. from A to Z. And so if you're not willing to guide them through the process and offer your advice, of course, with a caveat that you know, maybe you're not, maybe you don't know the specifics of the process they're going through, but you can guide them in what you think is the right direction mm-hmm. and answer all those questions. If you don't enjoy that, that's not the best client yeah. for you. What kind of deadlines are you comfortable with, and how you handle being under pressure? I know I had a client in the early days of me freelancing that I would almost never even hear from the project managers. I would just get an automated email every morning, you know, with a deadline, which is like in 3 or 4 hours. Mm. As a newbie, I was like, okay, look, you know, that's practice. That's great. The pay was decent. And I was okay with doing that for a while. But then the more it kept happening, the more I was like, well, I feel like I'm not even, you know, this is just such an automated process that there's no personal interaction at all. And when I started declining or negotiating some longer deadlines, I would almost never hear back. It's like, you know, the black hole I mentioned before. It was like, nope, no answer. And then I would just get an automated email again saying either like, you know, the deadline was extended or they removed the project. So they assigned it to somebody else, which is fine with me because if the deadline didn't work, it didn't work. But so for me, the urgency is not always willing to accept. You know, there's a certain type of pressure I'm willing to accept, and super tight deadlines and projects coming in at the, you know, the last minute. It's not something I am okay with doing constantly. And then another thing to consider could be how confident you feel in your subject area and whether you feel that you need or rely on someone else to quality check your work. So these are just some examples of questions you might want to ask yourself as you're evaluating your strengths and opportunities, room to grow, and that would guide you to answer the question of what type of clients are the best fit for you. So what about you, Madalena? What do you think are some good ways to determine what kinds of clients are the right fit?
Yeah, well, I loved all of the ones that you shared, and I think especially the one about the subject area, I feel like that's another one that comes with time, right? I think all of these things kind of come with time. So it's not that you're going to know right out of the gate who your ideal clients are. But I talked to some colleagues who have been working for 5, 10, 15 years, and they can't tell me who their ideal clients are either. So I feel like the earlier you can determine that for yourself, knowing that it will change, the better, right? Because it does change with your circumstances and types of work you want to accept. I mean, we've talked here about, you know, how you took on localization work more last year and you love it. So, you know, maybe your ideal clients have changed as well.
And it's, I was going to say that the time I took your TNI website blueprint course, is that is that the right name? I remember when I took that course and I was learning, you know, about the best redirect copy for my website. And as part of that, we did this exercise on describing your ideal client or the client you're communicating with through your website. And when I look back, and that was just a few years ago, and I look back at that copy and many of those client avatars, you know, we'll come back to that term, but many of those client descriptions have changed for me. They're completely different now.
And they should, right? And that's what I always tell people is that they should change. But I know a lot of people who take my course who've been practicing for many years, they'll tell me, I have never thought about this. And they're grateful to do it because they realize, whoa, you know, I can actually add more services because I realize that these clients need these things too. I have some students right now who are in the middle of the course, and they've also said, like, this is more than I expected from a website course, right? I didn't think that I was going to really sit down and figure out who my ideal clients were, but that's really what you have to do to make, you know, your copy and your website speak to those people. And that's part of it too, is that determining who your ideal clients are is gives you kind of a sense of empowerment. It tells you a lot of things about the way that you want to run your business, the way that you like to work. And that, you know, if you flip that around, that's what I was going to say in answer to this question about some good ways to determine what kind of clients are the right fit for you, is think about, how do you want to run your business, right? Do you want to be working at odd hours? You know, and maybe your clients are in Europe and you're in the United States, so you work very early. I did that for a number of years. I would start working at 5 a.m. I did. But I got finished earlier, or so I told myself. In reality, I didn't. I still worked till about 6 p.m. It was rough. I'm telling you, it was a rough few years. But at the same time, I realized that wasn't for me. It didn't. That's not how I wanted to run my business, right? So I focused more on what are the hours that I want to work and can work. And that was part of, you know, the logistical side, I should say, of running my business. But then another side of that is, what kinds of clients do I want to offer my services to, right? Because that helps me also to say, this is part of how I want to run my business. I want to work with these types of clients. I want to serve this group, these types of businesses or organizations. And then, you know, various other things you can take into account. But if you, it's almost like taking a bigger picture look at what it is that you value for your business and for your lifestyle, and building your business around that. And that will oftentimes help you to determine who the right clients are for you. I've seen so many aha moments from colleagues who've sort of looked at it this way when they're looking at who their ideal clients might be. And it's so interesting to watch the shift they see happen. And some of them completely change who they want to be working with in the process. Or they realize who they don't want to be working with, which is also quite valuable, I think.
Right. I love it.
So I guess the brief answer to that is determine what you want your business to do for you, right? Not necessarily what you want to do for your business. I think that's a helpful way to determine, who the right clients could be for you. But this also has to do with, in this determination, right? What your clients' expectations are of you as a service provider and what you expect of them. And we all have our comfort zones and expectations. So what works for me may not necessarily work for you or another translator. So for example, like you mentioned, how quickly you might respond to clients or your communication style in general. One of the determinations I made several years ago was I don't want to work those crazy hours, right? I don't want to have to be available at the drop of a hat to pick up a new job. I want to have the flexibility to take on a project today and be able to deliver it in 2 to 3 days' time, even if I don't need 2 to 3 days' time, because that way I can fit it into my project queue and take on other things as well at the same time, rather than doing that transactional style of turnaround, which for me was just very stressful. I think it would be for a lot of people. And then also like your availability in general, you know, that changes as your circumstances do. I mentioned turnaround time. That's usually a very good determining factor about whether a client is right for you or not, because you don't want to be always at, you know, stress level 10 because you're having to turn everything around on a dime. Speaking of dimes, payment terms. I'm hearing from more and more colleagues that they're being asked to accept payment terms of like net 60, I think I even heard net 90 once.
Yes, I've heard that too.
Yeah, I won't accept anything more than net 45, right, for same. Payment terms. But my typical standard length of time for payment terms is 30 days, right, from invoicing. But there are times where if it's a new client or especially an individual, I may ask for the money in advance or I may ask for it upon receipt. So if you are somebody who feels like you would be better off considering only clients who pay, you know, like within a certain amount of time, that's something to think about too, when you're determining who the right people are to work with. And then of course, preferred communication methods. People who not only will communicate with you about the project, right? Not like what you were talking about earlier about that one type of client that you never got an answer from. I mean, that's one thing, right? Preferred communication is to communicate well, but also that they're not maybe trying to reach you at strange hours of the day or night or weekends or whatever, that they're clear with their expectations, that you're not always like still left wondering what is it that they want or how do they want to handle this or, you know, is it best for you to work, communicate via email or phone, or do you want to actually sit down with new clients and have a virtual meeting? Because that's also valuable.
Yeah.
There's a lot of value in that, I have to say. I try to mention that where I can, because I think you can get more long-term and better clients when you sit down and have a preliminary meeting with them, even if you only ever meet with them in face-to-face one time, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like virtually, or if you have the luxury of being able to meet in person, great. But there's a lot to be said for that. And many times, especially with direct clients, you can get more out of that conversation if you meet face-to-face than through an email exchange, I would say, many times, right? And then what are the platforms that you like to use to communicate? Are there project management platforms that you need to use or learn in order to deliver things to your clients? And do they use certain tools that you need to be on board with or using, or You know, something like that is also something to take into account. I know that some clients have sort of clunky systems, and so that turns some people off, and they say, well, this is just too complicated. I don't want to deal with this. So that is something to think about. And then, of course, the types of services and the scope, right? You know, turnkey versus a specific task. How do you want to deliver services? Mm-hmm. What are the scope of the services you want to deliver? Do you want to just have one part of the process, like you said, or do you want to see it through from A to Z? Yeah, and anything else that you might think of that's important, right? Because I know that we have some interpreters, too, that listen to this podcast, and so they probably have even additional things to think about.
Oh, for sure,
yeah. Yeah, and for those, you know, colleagues who, like me, do some copywriting as well, that's a whole another set of circumstances to consider.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you think?
So many great points that you mentioned, and I really wanted to comment on a couple of things, like the communication with your client. I know, I know not all clients are willing or like see the need in having a meeting, but when I come across clients who propose to have a meeting or even have a phone chat, I'm always so excited about that. And I know not all colleagues of ours enjoy that part too, but if you do, you know, that may be a signal that that's the right type of client for you. You can just learn so much more in a conversation, whether it's virtual, face-to-face, or even a phone call. Get all your questions answered, ask the questions that you have, just establish that rapport with a client, and just adds that extra layer of personal communication that may really play in your favor long term. And I know learning new platforms is not something many people enjoy, but I think I really see the value in being open to using new platforms and learning new platforms, especially in the line of work that I really enjoy lately in localization, because you can have you can use platforms like Slack to connect with colleagues working on localization in other languages, for example, and you can have that conversation that really enriches not only your work but like the overall quality of the product, and you can have easier conversations with the project managers. Working with linguistic testing, I really enjoy, and I know that may sound weird to some, but I really enjoy using and learning the platforms that companies use for like filing bug reports or like tickets for things that still need to be fixed, you know, in apps and such. And I know it's it may feel like a weird thing to some, because those are not like really fun platforms, but I really like that because it's all very straightforward and you feel like you have this direct line to the client and their team and fixing stuff and making the product better, and you get immediate you know, not immediate, but you get really quick feedback and you have those conversations that I really enjoy. But then on the flip side, we may have certain expectations of our clients too. Like, you know, you mentioned payment that goes both ways. You know, how do your clients prefer to pay you and what are your specific payment preferences? Availability, I agree, is a big one, and responsiveness. And it goes both ways too. Like how quickly do the clients expect you to respond, and when do you expect to receive like a reasonable response from your client if you have a question or you have need clarification about the project? How clear their instructions are. There's a balance there too, between like reading instructions that look like a book, like those long, long emails, you know, with like 10 attachments, or, you know, using a more concise version of those, or, you know, finding other ways to communicate those instructions. Whether you receive feedback after the project is completed. For me, it's really important. I always appreciate that. And then communication style too can differ, you know, whether you prefer to have a very formal communication and relationship with a client versus informal. And I know I've had clients that really are in very different ends of that spectrum. And I personally, I'm fine with either, but I'm definitely having more fun and have better, you know, deeper connections and personal relationships with clients who have more informal style of communication. Mm. And anything else that matters to you as you work with your clients, you know, I think it's a good idea to write these things down even as they come mm-hmm. up. Like as you work on specific projects, we mentioned it in one of the episodes, you know, taking a quick mental recap of the project after you completed it. I know you don't always think about that.
Yeah.
You may think you don't even have time for that. But that's right. That's really the best practice in the industry, you know, in the profession is to do...
In the corporate world, too.
To do like...
Just in general. Mm-hmm.
Like to do a post-mortem or like an evaluation of the project after it's been wrapped up. Like what went well? What didn't go well? Mm-hmm. What would I, you know, implement next time? And that's something we can do and should do as freelancers, too. So as you do that, take note of things that you really... enjoyed or appreciated mm-hmm. in working with specific clients.
By the way, post-mortem is a terrible word for that.
I know.
I prefer hits and misses.
Yes, I love that too. Yeah, that word, the post-mortem, every time I see that, I'm like, so I know funny. It's so common, but...
It's weird.
Yeah. So what about a so-called client avatar or client profile? Mm. We mentioned it earlier and we know that it's a helpful tool when you plan your marketing efforts or write your website copy, but it is also helpful as you think about finding out or deciding who the right clients are for you. And once mm-hmm. you've decided on that, looking for more of those types of clients. So a client avatar, for those who are not familiar with that term, is a way to visualize your ideal client, but paint their picture in a little more detail than we typically do. So going away from, oh, I wish I could find better clients narrative mm-hmm. to a very specific idea or description of the type of client you're actually looking for. Mm-hmm. So when defining a client avatar, it's like you're creating a persona for the particular client. You're assigning specific characteristics or attributes that would make them, in your eyes, an ideal client to work with. You give them a fictional name, you know, maybe describe their age, where they work, what they do, mm-hmm. what their values are, what is important to them, how they like to work, what they expect of other people when they work with them, and what their goals are. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that once you have defined your client avatar, you get like laser focused. Not mm-hmm. only in looking for these specific clients, but also identifying whether clients that approach you are the right fit. I know it's not always easy to determine right off the bat, but there are certain criteria that can guide you in the right direction. And you get better at speaking their language and communicating your value. What can you bring to the table? So I really appreciated my experience in drafting my client avatars when I worked on my website copy through your course. And then later on, when I review my business goals and like hits and misses, things that went well and could mm-hmm. be improved for the next year or the next quarter, I think that's a really healthy time frame to look at your client avatars again. And if not, like at the time when you update your website copy or as you plan your marketing efforts, to really review those client profiles and see if there's anything that needs to be changed. And I did notice that they change over time for sure. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on this, Madalena?
Well, you know, I could talk about this all day.
Yes.
But, you know, I actually have several blog posts on this, but a couple of them specifically, if you've never done this before, it's really helpful. And a lot of people see this as a really difficult task, so they just like basically shut down before they even start the task. But it is so worthwhile to sit down for an hour or two at the most. I don't even think you need 2 hours, but an hour, let's say. Take some time for your business and do that and really define who your ideal clients are. And you may not be able to fill in every little bit of a profile. I like to call it the ideal client profile, because for me, the word avatar makes me think of like a cartoon type of thing. But I know that that's the term in marketing. And so I just call it an ideal mm-hmm. client profile. But it's so helpful. And I think what you said was right on the money. Like if you take the time to do it, then it not only helps you to determine who you're going to try to market to, but also who's not the right fit for you. That there is so much power in that, because then you don't have to say, well, I have to take on every job that comes my way, or I mean, then you have a choice, right? Then you could say, well, yeah. Do I need the money this month? Do I have the time? Might this work out? I don't know. You know, maybe they will be a right fit. Maybe they won't. I'm not sure. Do I want to take the time to find out? There's a lot of power in figuring out who the right clients are for you. And if you think about it, every brand, every company has an ideal client, right?
Yeah.
I think I gave this comparison in a copywriting course that I taught. And it's essentially like, think of the most expensive hotel chain you can think of. And I think I gave the example of the Ritz-Carlton, for example. And then like a low-end sort of motel option. And I don't remember, maybe it was something like Motel 6, right? Completely different, completely different. But each of those have an ideal client, right? And each of those companies makes money from their ideal clients and, right, has a business model and serves their customers however it is that they do. But they are not trying to serve everybody. And I think that that is what you have to really just come to terms with if you've never done this before, or if you need to do it again, let's say, right? Because like we said, you can't just do it once. And I think like you were mentioning, during a business retreat is a perfect time to revisit that once, twice a year. And so, yeah, I completely agree with you. I would sing it from the rooftops that creating an ideal client avatar or profile is incredibly important. And when it changes, that's not a bad thing, right? It's a great thing. Because from there, you can say, wow, my business is evolving, you know?
Yeah.
Or I learned that I don't want to work with this type of client anymore. And now I have like something on paper to show me why. And I don't have to just take everything, you know, that client maybe sends me or something. Like it really does give you a sense of confidence too, I think. So one question that I often get from our colleagues when I teach these types of courses is, how do I find that information about my ideal client? Like you were mentioning, you know, what are their goals? What are their challenges? How do they like to communicate? All the things that if you visit that blog post, you'll find what to fill in for your ideal client avatar or profile. It can be daunting at first, right? When you review like a sample profile and try to think about how you might fill it in. But here's why I think it's helpful to create one for the different types of clients you work with. One, you don't actually need just one. Some people say, well, I can't put all my clients into one profile. Well, right. Okay. But you probably have several clients who fit into one of those profiles, or you have one client, even if you have just one. This is the thing. Even if you have only one client who seems ideal, out of all of your clients, that's worthwhile.
Mm.
Right? Because where there's one, there are more.
Right. Start with one.
Yeah, start with one, exactly. And then if you have different like services that you offer or different specializations, you may have more than one profile. And I think that the important thing to remember is, even if you don't have any ideal clients at this time, right, when you're doing this, it's okay to not know all the answers about how to fill in a profile. Fill it in as best you can and do a little bit of legwork, research on them to figure out how they appear to their clients online. Are they on social media? Do they only have a website? Are they a brick and mortar business? What are their challenges? What keeps them going? What are their goals? I mean, some of this you may have to actually sit down with somebody and ask them questions. Fine. You know, people are open to that, right? Even if it's not one of your actual clients, you could probably talk to somebody in that field if you need to. And doing this should feel, I don't think that letting it feel daunting to the point of letting it stop you is a worthwhile experience, right? It should feel almost like a fun research project, something you're trying to, I mean, we all do research, right? As translators and interpreters, think of it that way, because this is the future of your business. So I really do think that it's one of the most worthwhile things you should do for your business. And even if it's daunting at first, remember that what's going to come out of the other side is going to be so worth the time you put into it. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I know when I first did this exercise with creating a client avatar, it felt daunting for sure. And it felt like a stretch. You know, do I really have that information?
Do I need this?
Yeah. Do I need this?
Do I have to? I know everybody tries to talk themselves out of it. And I'm like, no.
But once you start.
Sit down and do it.
Once you do the first one, you either work with that, or like I was motivated to develop two more, like, and I ended up using, because I have several areas of specialization.
That's right.
I ended up having three client avatars. Mm-hmm. And they were really helpful. So one thing that helped me as I was working in them is I just did this mental audit of my past projects and clients mm-hmm. that I really enjoyed working with. So I tried to think yeah. of their character traits and their workflow. What did I enjoy? What was it specifically that made it a nice memory for me? Mm-hmm. Or why do I enjoy working with them still? And so using that as part of the description, mm-hmm. another source of inspiration and information are social media platforms where those people are, right?
Yeah.
Like LinkedIn is a big one. You can also visit a company website if that's a particular client. You know, you can read their staff bios, and especially in translation and localization, there are many companies who try and make their staff bios fun and add some mm-hmm. personal elements to them. And, you know, what is it that I enjoy to do in my free time? Or so that gives you some ideas too. You can read their blog posts mm-hmm. If they have a blog on their website and just get a sense for the style, the communication style, the things that are important to them. And just engaging in small talk, as you mentioned, most people are open to sharing you know, little tidbits about themselves, even virtually.
Oh yeah.
And just take notes of the little things they share with you, and share too, you know, if you are open to that, like, you know, where are you going on vacation, or if they just came back from vacation, how was it and where did you go, and, you know, learning little things about them and their preferred communication style and how they carry themselves. Yeah. that can be helpful. Mm-hmm. And I also think that when you set goals for your business, if your goal is to get a certain number of type of new clients, you can be more specific in describing them and knowing who the right clients are for you. If you have those client avatar,
yes,
or avatars, if you have those in place, like a goal, you know, I want to get two new direct clients is too vague, mm-hmm. which is why it can be hard to achieve it or feel satisfied.
That's so true.
Right. Yeah. Because you're like, you know, how do I measure that? And what's, are they just some random
right.
new clients, or are they clients I actually enjoy working with?
Yeah. And sometimes you never achieve it because it's so vague.
Yeah, right. Because you're looking for something, but you're not looking, like, it's not narrow enough. It's not specific
right.
enough.
And it's looking at it as a number. Mm-hmm. It's not looking yeah. at, you know, what's the quality of this.
Right. Yes, right. But if you already know what type of clients are the right fit for you, then your business goals will be more specific, and it will be clearer to you how to achieve them. I think I mentioned, like, you'll be more laser focused and you'll feel like you're on the right track. You're not getting distracted. You're focused rather than scattered, because you have developed this much clearer picture in your mind of what kind of people, what kind of clients you're hoping to find more of. And so yeah. you have some specific parameters to search for when you do client outreach, and you're more confident in the way you communicate with them, because you have in your, you know, in your head or on paper, however you do this exercise with a client avatar, you have already worked through what type of people they are and how they like to communicate and with others. So you're more confident in the copy you write for your website or how you craft your emails or any other sort of outreach. What do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree, because when you get down to the specifics, it makes it a lot easier, like you said, to search and mm-hmm. to find companies or individuals or organizations, whoever your clients are, yeah. to fit into those parameters. And I think that it's a little bit, you know, like a lot of people think, well, then I'm making it too narrow. I just won't find clients. You mm-hmm. know, I don't have a wide enough net or something, but it's the opposite, yeah. actually. You find better clients mm-hmm. by doing this.
Yeah.
And I think, who doesn't want better clients, right? Who doesn't want the right clients for them? And so it also, I was thinking as we were talking about that, it also helps you to tell other people what you're looking for, like
yeah.
whether it's friends, colleagues, or your clients, like, hey, my schedule just opened up and I'm looking to work with a few new clients in this area. Mm-hmm. And you can be really specific. And I heard somebody say once, if you're going to ask somebody for a favor in the sense of like recommending or referring somebody to your business, you can't be vague, kind of like what you were saying. You can't be vague and say, I'm looking for new direct clients. That's not helpful.
No.
It's not helpful to the person receiving that information. You really need to tell them, I'm looking for clients who work in this area, specifically with blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I need to connect with people who are in these types of positions. Do you know anyone? Or can you refer me to anyone who does?
Mm-hmm.
That gives them information which helps them to actually answer your question or potentially refer people to you.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, I think that just really narrowing it down and being specific is all around just an empowering thing to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, if when you find yourself feeling like, oh my gosh, maybe this is just too narrow or too, you know, I'm closing too many doors by doing this, think about the doors that could open because you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What kind of flexibility will it give you in your schedule? What kind of increase in income might it give you? Or, I don't know, other things that are valuable to you in your business.
Right. Job satisfaction.
Job satisfaction, right? Life yeah. satisfaction, right?
Right.
More work-life clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that that's really, really helpful to look at it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I really like what you said about that also being helpful when you share with colleagues or like say it out, you know, be open about looking for new clients, because having been on the receiving end of some requests like this, it's so much more challenging to be helpful when you're
yeah.
not sure exactly what the person's looking for.
Right.
And then if you do get specifics, then ideas start flowing. And also, you know, it's like asking for more, basically. You know, when you're not specific enough, you're putting more on that other person's shoulders and like letting them figure out what's going to be a good fit for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I think that about covers everything for this episode. But before we wrap up, let's do a smart habit check-in and see how we've been doing some of our smart habits. For me, one habit I've been really focusing on this busy and fun summer is intentional daily movement, mm-hmm. because I actually have a gym membership again. It's not the gym. It's my favorite bar studio that I got the membership for again as soon as I got vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been enjoying classes, both virtually and at the studio, but I froze my membership for the summer. And so I've been really focusing on some little, have we called them movement bites? Or
oh, I think Eva Stabenow called yeah. them movement snacks.
Movement snacks, exactly. That's mm-hmm. how she called them. So when I feel like I don't have time for a proper workout, I know there are many workouts you can find on YouTube and other places, but it's not always you have time for, you know, not even 20 minutes or like 30 minutes. So just focusing on any other intentional movement, walking, swimming, we have a pool, playing some fun active game with the kids, going on a bike mm-hmm. ride or going on a long walk with our dog,
mm-hmm.
Anything that I can do, even a couple of times a day that is not your normal type of movement, walking around the house or, you know, I live in Houston too, so we use our cars a lot. So I feel like we're definitely mm-hmm. less active than we were when we lived in Europe. So that's really my focus these days. What about you? What smart habit are you working on?
Yes, I'm working on something that I guess I've been doing for a while, but I really have been paying better attention to it now as I do it. And that is setting myself up for the next day in the sense of doing something today that tomorrow me will thank me for.
Oh, I love it.
Right? I'm offering to everybody, do something today that tomorrow you will thank you for. And for me, that is looking ahead at the next day, at the meetings and tasks that I have to do and any kind of family type stuff that I need to handle or take care of or you know, take time off for. And then ordering my tasks for the day in two ways. One, the time of day that's most productive for me to get those things done, and the order of importance. So I kind of try to line those up so that the next day when I sit down at my desk or do whatever I need to do, let's say, you know, between meetings or something, there's no question, and I can't go, well, oh gosh, what do I have to do today? You know, it's already there. It's ready for me. It's in order. It reminds me of what Dorothea Rousset shared. I think she shared it here, and she said she likes to set up sort of a roadmap for the day. Mm. So I guess you could call it a roadmap. That's what I've been doing. It's really helpful. So
I love it.
Oh, and let's share what we're currently reading that we've read recently. So if you're new to the podcast, this is a segment we call Book Nook, where we share a book that we're currently reading or that we've read recently that we'd like to share it with other people. And so what book would you like to mention?
I would like to mention a book by our colleague and our past guest on this podcast, Yo Sechen. Mm. He wrote a book called Characters with Character. It's one of his recent books, and I
haven't gotten it yet. I need to get
one.
Oh
goodness, it's a beautiful book to just have out on display around your house.
It looks like a coffee table
book.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, and it's fun for both grown-ups and kids to look through. Mm-hmm. My 8-year-old at least, not my 4-year-old so much, but my 8-year-old loves flipping through the pages, and mm-hmm. so it's about different characters from different languages and different writing systems, and there's a little story for every character, like on each page. That is just really interesting, especially if you love languages. Mm-hmm. I feel like it would be a beautiful gift as well to colleagues or clients or anyone in your family who's interested in languages. So I'm really enjoying that. It's the type of book you keep wanting to come back to. And that's why I think it's so nice, as you mentioned, as a coffee table book or just book to have out on the shelf that you see often and flip through.
Oh, that would be also a nice book to gift to a colleague. Yeah. But I have to figure out who doesn't have one. I don't have one. I need to get one and figure out who doesn't have one. Oh, cool. I've been thinking about his book, but I forgot to order one. Now you've reminded me. And the book that I'm reading right now is called The Mother-in-Law. It's a novel by Sally Hepworth. Mm. She writes mostly mystery and suspense novels. If you've been around for a while, you know that those are the types of books I enjoy. Mm-hmm. But it's good. It's very, she writes in a way that's very easy to read and very smooth. And it's just the content flows really well. She goes back and forth in time periods, but it's not confusing, you know? Yeah. And it's a book about, I don't want to give too much away in case other people like this type of genre, but a book about a family. The wife marries into a family where her mother-in-law has always been kind of like standoffish and rude to her. Mm. And she lost her own mother when she was like an early teen, like 13 or something. And so she was hoping all her life that her mother-in-law one day would be this like mother figure for her. Mm. Well, she's not. But then the mother-in-law turns up dead. So people are like looking at her like, you never liked her to begin with, you know? So there's the mystery of how did she die and did somebody kill her or not? And it's just very twisty and it's interesting. And it's been named by a few different like magazines and as, you know, like a top book of the year. And yeah, so it'd be a fun one for the summer if anybody's looking for a summer read.
That sounds perfect. Mm-hmm. So that's it for today's episode, and we will be taking a break for the summer, and we'll be back with a new episode on August 10th. Next week, our email subscribers will get a summary of this episode, including the links to all the resources that we mentioned today. So if you're not receiving our emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com, and you'll be the first to know when we're back with a new episode in August.
Yeah, we're looking forward to spending time with our families this summer, and we hope that you have a great summer too. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you if you have any thoughts on this episode or suggestions for future episodes. You can leave a comment on the show notes page for the episode, which you'll find on our website, or you can tag us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, or email us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And if you like this episode, there are a couple of simple ways you can show your support. Please share it with your colleagues and friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This only takes a minute, and we recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.